please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 769. I am Lisa Sheps. I am going to be joined today, in just a little while, by a guest host, Mr. Jim Lindsay. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this show live every Wednesday at KOOP.org.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
It's bad luck to say good luck on opening night. If you do,
it is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. On the show today, we have Broadway and Austin's Girl from the North Country. And then later on, we'll be talking to Gaslight Baker Theater and their show Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And we'll have all of that, including the world of the theater, with news and reviews in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, and Philadelphia. Stick with us.
I got it. Now I'll never say good luck on opening night. That's the rule. I'm no fool. What do I say? I beg. What
you say? Okay, and we are joined, as promised, by my guest co-host, Jim Lindsay. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here. Now, I do wish that the video camera was on today, because everybody would see these polka dot shorts of yours right now,
yes,
which are special.
My polka dot shorts.
In so many ways. It's so glad to have you here.
Yeah, these are my radio shorts.
Good. Well, yeah, this is my radio face. you didn't hear it. Well, no, hold that thought. How are you? Tell me what's going on. We have not actually spoken in a while, and you just walked in the studios. So we didn't get to talk beforehand.
I know.
So what's going on? What's going on in your life? Theatrically speaking.
Theatrically, I'm focused on being a very good audience member.
Oh, amazing.
Yes.
God, what does that feel like?
Yes.
No, I know what it's like to be an audience member. I don't know what it's like to be a very good one.
Yes, trying to see as much as I can here in the greater Austin area.
Lovely. Have you seen anything fun?
Let's see. I got to see Disaster at the Georgetown Palace.
I
got to see The Prom.
I've heard good things about The Prom.
It's delightful.
Yeah.
Absolutely delightful at Zach Theater. Absolutely delightful.
Yep.
Yep. Some friends of ours are doing understudy work for the leads. So we got to
USW, we call that.
Mm-hmm. All the standbys.
Mm-hmm.
But the show is really, really delightful, very colorful. And I really appreciate how Zach used their pre-professional teenagers as teenagers in the show, as opposed to maybe older accomplished actors. And they were just a joy to watch. It was just so great to watch the students.
Yeah. We've had the pre-professional company on here several times, and I haven't had them on in a while. So we need to get them back on.
Yes.
Well, that is amazing. I'm happy. So our listeners probably know this, but you are a well-worn director here in town, as well as a performer. I take it that you don't have anything that you're working on right now.
I'm on a gap year.
You're on a gap year.
No, I'm taking a break now because we've got some things coming up in the summer, but I've already booked something for the fall that I can't quite announce yet, but it's going to be outside of Austin.
But it rhymes with Schmady's Town.
But it does have something to do with the show that you and I worked on together.
Oh, well, we've worked on several, but
some years ago. So when I can let you know, I'll let
you
know.
Is that a fun show?
It is a... I think it's
what do you
fun.
Call it? Is it a fun show or a normal show?
Oh, normal's definitely in there.
Okay.
It's actually just adjacent to...
Okay, good. Okay. All right. Well, we got it. So the song I played here was from The Producers, You Never Say Good Luck on Opening Night, which is true because you say break a leg. By the way, And I always had, and I don't know if I've ever said this on this program before, but you know, the origins of break a leg have, you know, nobody really knows where it comes from, but I liked the theory for a long time. I thought it was from John Wilkes Booth.
Who after jumping off
after he shot the president, he jumped off the balcony and broke his leg.
Yes,
and I thought the break leg, but no. My current favorite one is this one. So when an actor comes on the stage, so the curtains that go along the sides are called legs.
Yes,
and when you go through, and people can't see this because it's for the radio, you take your arm and you break the leg as you come on stage.
I like that one better.
I do too. So yeah. That's my current one. anyway, I chose that because, and I don't. I'm sure this happens in many years. So as you know, the deadline for Tony nominations is coming up in like a couple of days. So there's a lot of openings. But I don't quite remember having in 1 week 8 openings.
I cannot keep up with the email.
8 openings this yes. last week from Wednesday to Wednesday. And so I don't remember it being that way. So we have a lot of openings to talk about. And the first one I wanted to talk about, we talked about it briefly last Wednesday because it opened last Wednesday. And that was the revival of The Wiz.
Yes, which I have tickets for.
You do?
Oh, yes.
Lovely. When are you going to New York?
I'll be there in end of June, beginning of July.
What else, before we talk about it, what else are you going to see?
Well, I've already seen Merrily.
Okay.
I saw...
will you adopt me?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I saw Merrily, I saw Pearly Victorious, and I saw Prayer for the French Republic.
Is Leslie Odom Jr. still in Pearly Victorious?
No, that did close. But oh. It definitely got recognized.
But did you see it? Was he in it when
mm-hmm.
you saw it?
Okay, yes, good. I did.
That's what I meant to say.
But we're going to see The Wiz. We're going to see The Outsiders. And then we'll see what else happens. The reviews are interestingly coming in, but Stereophonic looks fascinating.
Yes, and yes. We're going to talk about that. It is one of the shows that opened this week. So let's talk about The Wiz. Interestingly, it did not do as well as I thought it was going to do.
Agree.
Did They Like It aggregator had 12 reviews, 6 were positive, 4 were middle of the road, and 2 were negative. But everybody said, and I have to admit this, I've never seen a live version of The Wiz in my life. Mm-hmm. But nobody has ever said it's just a really great show. I mean, it's groundbreaking for what it was or for what it is. But nobody's ever said it's a really great show. Have you seen it live?
I have. It was my first Broadway musical that
really?
I ever saw, 6 years old.
Back in the day, in the 80s, the day, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. Well, it opened in 75, but mm-hmm. I think that there was a revival. So did you
there
see
was.
It in
There was a revival in the 80s,
80s.
Very short-lived.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And not only did I see the original with Stephanie Mills and still remember everything about it as a 6-year-old.
In 75?
In 76.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Can't wait for this one. Yes, I'm very aware of all of the causes for concern that some of the reviewers have had, but still very excited about it. But also, I got help direct it at one point.
Lovely.
At one of the schools where I taught.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Well, this one was directed by Shel Williams, and it's had an updated book by Amber Ruffin. It opened at the Marquee Theater last Wednesday. And it says, this is reviewed by Maya Phillips of the New York Times, it stops short of bringing modern blackness to Broadway. And that was kind of the idea, is that it might modernize a little bit of it, but they said it wasn't doing very well. Dorothy is played by Nichelle Lewis in her Broadway debut. And her Aunt Em is Melody Betts, who's also plays Eveline. And then Wayne Brady, of course, is The Wiz. Scarecrow is played by Avery Wilson. The Tin Man is Philip Johnson Richardson. And the Ryan is Kyle Rumar Freeman. Deborah Cox plays Glinda. Choreography is by Joquel Knight. So not a lot of great things to say, not terrible things to say. She said that Ruffin's book offers a few modern updates to the lingo and gives her companions new backstories. Dorothy, though, still lacks dimension, she says. She said there's a hemmed-in quality to most of this production. So she also goes on to say, quote, The Wiz is a pleasant, serviceable time in the theater, but as a new production of a musical with a legacy of bringing blackness back to one of Hollywood's and Broadway's favorite fairy tales is less satisfying.
Isn't that too bad?
Yeah, it really is too bad.
If that's the case.
And, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion. And mm-hmm. you'll come back and you'll tell us mm-hmm. what you thought.
Still excited to see.
Brittany Samuels of Broadway News said The Wiz is certifiable, soulful, great time, and thankfully it's back home. Greg Evans of Deadline said, other highlights, Melody A. Betts as Eveline, blowing the roof off the marquee with Don't Nobody Bring Me No Bad News, and funny Allison K. Daniel as Dorothy's good witch greeter. And finally, Naveen Kumar of Variety said, hip-hop moves provide the production's most electrifying moments. So that is The Wiz. Mm-hmm. The Wiz, ease on down the road. The next thing that opened, and I'm just going to guess that it opened on Thursday, which would be the next day. And this is one I'm really excited about. It was Suffs.
Yes.
The Shana Taubman. Did you see that?
No, but no. Very, very interested in seeing that.
That would be on my list to see. Mm-hmm. It had, I've got to do math, 13 reviews, 8 were positive, 5 were middle of the road. And this was Shana Taub's story about the suffragettes. Mm-hmm. We don't like to call them suffragettes because the ets is a diminutive. Mm-hmm. So we call them suffs. And I've been talking about this on the show. The stuff I've seen seems so fun, so much fun. The music is fun. So much of it seems fun to me, and the cast is amazing. It did open on Thursday at the Music Box, which is one of my favorite theaters in New York.
Love the Music Box.
Do.
Which favorite show you ever saw at the Music Box?
I do not know.
I'm going to say Death Trap.
Okay. Yep. Didn't see Death Trap, but I knew somebody that worked on it back in the day. And I've told that story here, too, because there's a whole story along that. So Shana Taub wrote the book and the lyrics, and she started this project 10 years ago. She's also in it. She plays Alice Paul, who is one of the suffragettes trying to get the women's vote. Interestingly enough, what they talk about on this show more than working together is a lot of the infighting that was happening between, and not a lot to be proud of, the women that were fighting for the vote, the black women that were trying to fight for the vote, where they were actually told to like basically go to the back of the bus. Nikki, oh my God, I just lost her name. Nikki M. James plays, and I've got to, I can't remember the actual person's name, but it's in here somewhere. She plays that role, which is really good. But they talk about a lot of the problems. And then there was the row between the people that were trying to work like nicely within the system and the others that were really being a little bit more militant about it. let's see. This review in the New York Times was written by Jesse Green. He says, quote, so this came from Off-Broadway. And he said it changed a lot going from Off-Broadway to Broadway, and he was favorable. And he said, but the 2022 Off-Broadway premiere was a jumble of earnestness and sarcasm, its impact compromised by overreach. In her review for the New York Times, Maya Phillips wrote that it was so scared to miss anything that it became bloated with information. Suffs on Broadway is vastly improved. It has been beneficially recast and heavily rewritten. Jen Colella is in it.
Yay.
Who we love. And this is directed by Lee Silverman. It is completely comprised of non-male. I got to go back because Nikki M. James played Ida B. Wells. Couldn't remember that.
Found it.
one of the main producers is somebody named Hillary Clinton.
Yes, she is. We're hoping for a Clinton sighting when we go.
Oh, good. Yeah, me too. Do you have tickets for this?
No, but we'll get them.
You're going to get them. Emily Skinner is also in it.
Yay.
So great cast. No men in the cast or in the orchestra.
Just in the audience.
Maybe.
Perhaps on the IHC team.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. But all the male characters are played by non-male actors. Looks good. So let's see. What else did Jesse Green say? Quote, Silverman's staging, except for the anemic protest scenes, is exemplary. But considered narrowly as drama, Suffs feels insufficient. Its scenes often come as educational skits, an effect accentuated at times by the resemblance to handsome dioramas with the women lined up in silhouette. And Taub, especially in writing her own role, has prioritized intelligence over expressiveness, making Paul seem not just driven, but robotic. She frequently says canned things like, governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, a paraphrase of the Declaration of Independence. So, and then in New York Magazine, Sarah Holdren wrote that the show is smart, witty, tuneful, and teeming with mighty performances. She also says that Taub smartly builds conflict and poignancy out of clashes, not over the ends, but the means. And that's what I was talking about before, about the infighting that they really talked about. And finally, she says, quote, but just as young Alice had no time for sweetness, Suff has no time for wistfulness as it nears its ending. That's because it's not an ending, and there isn't one in sight. As one of her epigraphs, Taub quotes in the Talmud, you are not obliged to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Suffs may send us back out into the world a little bruised, a little somber, but in no way defeated or alone. And I think they're talking a lot. I think they either had some people in the lobby or whatever talking about trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment passed, which we now have enough states to ratify, but it's not going to happen, evidently. Other critics, Broadway News, Brittany Samuel said, director Lee Silverman is the production's ballast, anchoring it all with crystal clear assuredness. And Chris Jones of the New York Daily News said, but in the end, Suffs does what all the best Broadway musicals do. It humanizes, empowers, entertains, and moves the audience.
That's all I require.
Yeah. So here's the deal, folks. We may not get through all these because we're going to have to, we have a phone guest in just a few minutes. So we're going to probably do one more just for you right now, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back with our guest from the current touring production of Girl from the North Country. And that is Stereophonic.
Yeah.
Yeah, surprise. 14 reviews, 13 were positive, one was mixed. So Stereophonics says, here's what it says it is. Stereophonics mines the agony and ecstasy of creation as it zooms in on a music studio in 1976, the year I graduated high school. Here, an up-and-coming rock band recording a new album finds itself suddenly on the cusp of superstardom. The ensuing pressure could spark their breakup or their breakthrough, and it's roughly based on
Fleetwood Mac
right. and Rumours. So it opened at the Golden Theatre on Friday, so we're on day three. Written by David Ajmi, I can't pronounce his name. And the songs are by the former Arcade Fire member Will Butler. This review for the New York Times is written by Naveen Kumar. He made it a critic's pick. He says, quote, a fly on the wall study of how people both need and viciously destroy each other. Stereophonic is a fiery family drama, as electrifying as any since Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's real-time dissection of music making, a collaboration between flawed, gifted artists wrangled into unison, is ingeniously entertaining and incisive meta-commentary on the nature of art. The play is a staggering achievement and already feels like a must-see American classic.
Doesn't that get you excited to go see
it? It really does. It really does. It looks like a wonderful thing. It's directed by Daniel Unken, who I do not know. Don't know any of the cast. Will Brill is the only one I sort of tangentially know. Juliana Canfield, Tom Pasinka, Sarah Pigeon, and Chris Stack, among others. And it's got a kind of an upstairs downstairs dynamic between the people, the talent inside the booth, and the engineers outside the booth, which they thought was very interesting. So it premiered off Broadway at Playwrights Horizons, and all around good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody seems to favor it.
Yep. So we're just going to take a little break right here. And then we're going to talk to our next guest and then maybe come back and talk a little bit more about this before we go and talk to our next guest. So we're going to take a little break. I do need to say here, one of the things that I was going to talk about was there is going to be a production of Fiddler on the Roof, one of my favorites, because it was the very first Broadway show I ever saw with Herschel Bernardi. But my friend, Jason Alexander, is doing a production of it in Los Angeles, directed by Lonnie Price. So I'm very excited about that. And he's going to play Tevye.
He's amazing.
He is amazing. And I've held his Tony Award in my hand.
Wow.
I know. I know. I'm dropping names. Anyway, so let's listen to Matchmaker from the most recent, the 2016 revival of Fiddler. And this is a song that took a lot of heat from some people because Matchmaker wasn't the joyful anthem it was. Well, it wasn't an anthem. The joyful song it was when it opened in the 60s or the 50s. 60s? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's more about what it really is, which is these young women being forced to marry people that they don't really want to marry. So let's listen to Matchmaker. Matchmaker. We'll be right back.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, you know.
And we are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and guest host Jim Lindsay. And normally in my intro, I let the co-host say hello. So just say hi.
Hi.
Yeah, because you weren't here when I did the intro. So we are really happy to have on the line with us on the telephone, Sheree Moultrie from the Broadway Across America Broadway Tour of Girl for the North Country. Sheree, are you here? Oh, you know what would help? If I turned your volume up. Sheree, are you here?
I am here. Can you hear me now?
I can. Excellent. I got scared. I'm always very nervous when I have people on the telephone. I say hello and then I don't hear anything. But what I've learned is that you have to turn their volume up in order to hear them.
Great takeaway.
Yep. Well, welcome to Offstage and On the Air. And welcome to Austin. Have you been to Austin before?
Thank you so much. Yes, I've been once before, but only for a couple of days, so this will be a longer stretch.
You get a little bit of time to get some of that barbecue and Tex-Mex in.
Exactly.
So you are here with Girl from the North Country. Can you tell folks a little bit about the show, what it is?
Yes, absolutely. Girl from the North Country is a musical that uses Bob Dylan's music. It is about a group of people who are living in the 1934, the Great Depression, in Duluth, Minnesota. They all end up at this rundown boarding house that's run by my family. And all of the people that are in there have their own challenges, and they're all trying to figure out what's next, right? And so there's a lot of music, there's a lot of challenge, there's a lot of funny humor and things like that, and family and community that comes along with the show.
Right. And you play Marianne Lane. And I had the privilege of seeing you perform last night.
Oh, did you really?
I did. You did an amazing job. What a dynamite voice you have.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot.
The first time, I believe the first time you sang solo, you stepped up to the microphone and just wailed. And it was gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So how long have you been on the road with Girl from the North Country?
Yeah, so we started the tour around October of last year. So it's been, I think, a little over 6 months.
For my
like
birthday?
That.
You did it for my birthday?
Exactly.
Excellent. And how familiar were you with Dylan's music before you did this show?
Honestly, not that familiar. Of course, I knew who he was and knew that he was a legend, but I wasn't super familiar with a lot of his songs. It just wasn't someone I listened to growing up.
Sure.
But I've definitely come to admire a lot of his lyricism and just the ability to transform his songs. It's really has been really wonderful.
Yeah, we were actually sitting in the audience talking to people afterwards, sort of promoting smaller theaters in Austin. And I talked to a whole bunch of people that just kept saying that they had to come see this show because they grew up with Dylan, so much about Dylan, and then they were surprised about the story that goes along with all these songs.
Yes. Just like sort of Dylan's music, the story is human, about humanity. I think a lot of people, when they don't necessarily know much about the show, think it's going to be about his life or et cetera. But it's not that. But I think it does a really great job of intertwining his music into the storyline of this family and community of folks who are banding together.
Right. Now, I'm going to just say something kind of controversial here, just in our own little circle. To me, it was more of a play with music versus a musical. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so I will say that during the rehearsal process, that is something that we've definitely talked about. Mm-hmm. I think you could see the show without the music and still get something out of it. But I think the music elevates the storyline and also just provides a little bit of extra color and allows the audience to kind of have their own emotions with what just happened in the scene before or right after.
Sure, we were talking about it. I went and reread the New York Times review of it from back in 2020. And I think it was, I think it was Mel Gusso actually that reviewed it. I can't remember exactly who it was, but they talked about the music and the use of there's the old timey microphones on the music stands, and how the music, when we went into the musical numbers, those microphone stands were used really expertly.
Yes, yeah, I think that this has been the first time I've gotten to sing with those microphones, and actually some of those mics are actually live.
Yeah, I was wondering whether they were or not, because of course you're all body mic'd as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, we're all body mic'd, but certain pieces, particularly when there's a soloist using the microphone, that microphone is hot and their body mic is off or really low or something like that. You'll have to ask the sound guys for all those the finite details, but yeah, that's my understanding.
They are my next call.
Good. Those guys are way smarter than I am about that stuff.
Yes. So you've done a lot of work in a lot of different things as well yourself, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I have an interesting journey. Started off in finance and switched to the nonprofit world and juggled that with musical theater and have now become just a musical theater artist full time. And it's been such a joy.
Yeah, I saw that you moved to New York to work in finance. And then, of course, you made, and everybody that works in finance says what you really want to do is get a nonprofit job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think going in, for me, when I thought about finance, it was like, okay, I'm going to do that first, make a lot of money, and then I'm going to save the world by starting a nonprofit. And then I realized I wanted to move into that space a little sooner, just because, I think I wanted to have something that felt really purposeful. Yeah. And then it gave me the opportunity to do some other stuff, too, that was near and dear to my heart.
Excellent. Only because I'm a big social justice warrior. I've worked a lot in the nonprofit space as well. What was the nature of your nonprofit?
Yeah, so our nonprofit was, the mission was to help people living in poverty in New York City. We were a bit of a funder of funds, so we provided funds to other nonprofits in the city. So we would go and sort of figure out who were the best of the best nonprofits doing the greatest work and then provide additional funds to them so that they can continue to help people in need.
That is amazing. And do you remember the first show that you auditioned for?
Very first show ever. I think I went and was The Color Purple, the Broadway show.
Excellent. Well, you've done The Color Purple.
Yeah, I've done The Color Purple on a regional level. But yeah, my very first audition for anything after I decided to start doing this again was the Color Purple revival. But yeah, my very first when I was in school was to go to the governor's school in South Carolina. That was the very first audition I ever did.
Well, that's amazing. So we're so happy to have you here. And you're here playing with Girl from the North Country through this weekend, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Through Sunday.
That is amazing. And you said this is your second trip to Austin. What are you looking forward to doing while you're here?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to explore. I'm excited about getting some barbecue again. We found this really great place last time. I'm trying to remember the name of it so that I can go back or find something even better.
I think it was called Lisa's Barbecue.
Oh, is that what it is?
I think so.
Perfect. yeah, just to get to know the city a little bit more. There's just so much here, and I think I know the folks are so wonderful here, and so I'm looking forward to meeting people and, yeah, just listening to live music. Good food and good people. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, great. Sheree Moultrie, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air. I really appreciate you coming here. And we look forward to your next trip here to Austin. Hopefully you come back on the show. Maybe we'll get you live in the studio.
That sounds lovely. I had such a great time talking with you.
Great, me too. Thanks so much.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Great. That was Sheree Moultrie of Broadway Across America's Girl from the North Country, playing now through the 28th at the Bass Concert Hall. For more information, you may visit austin.broadway.com. And this is the song from the show called Tight Connection to My Heart that she sings here in the Austin production. We'll be right back.
Well, I had to move fast, and I couldn't with
you. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Jim Lindsay. And we have been joined by our next guest here in the studio. We're not going to talk about their thing right now, but we want to give them the opportunity to weigh in on all the stuff we're talking about. Andrea Littlefield, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Dawn Wright Calvert, welcome.
Thank you.
Derek Pazinski, hi.
Thank you. Hello.
And Michael Vibri. Vibri.
It's Vibrol.
Vibrol.
Yeah, close enough.
You should see what I wrote on here. It's V-Y-B-I-R-A-Y. So what do I know? So all right, we're going to really quickly continue our conversation from before. We're going over some of the Broadway openings. We're going to have to just be really quick, Jim.
Let's do it.
You know what? I'm going to turn your microphone on. How about now?
How about now?
There you go. I'm really good at not turning microphones on. Okay. Let's see. That was a great conversation with Sheree.
Yeah, she sounds lovely. I'm going to see the show on Sunday.
Amazing voice. You're seeing it on Sunday?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so we're just going to zip through the rest of these openings. We just finished Stereophonic, and we did it in stereo, phonically. Hell's Kitchen.
How about Hell's Kitchen? Yeah.
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen was the next one that opened.
Are you excited about that?
That's the Alicia Keys. Yes and no. I'm not familiar with her music because I'm musically ignorant for pop music. But it did pretty well as well. It had 13 reviews, 10 of which were positive. 3 were in the middle of the road. She spent 12 years developing this. Elizabeth Vincentelli did the review for the New York Times. Have you seen it?
No, but I'm excited. I'm excited based on the reviews.
Yeah, me too. The reviews are really good. And it basically tells the story of Alicia Keys' life in a lot of ways. And they fixed it from its off-Broadway run to now to really be concentrating not on the love story interest, because there's a little love story interest between her and a doorman at Manhattan Plaza, which is where she grew up, to more the relationship between her and her mother. And that's evidently, according to a lot of the critics, what really did well. She's played by, the character's name is Ali, by Malia Joy Moon. Mm-hmm. And her mother, Jersey, is played by Shoshana Bean.
Yes.
Then her father is played by Brandon Victor Dixon. So it's a majorly wonderful cast. Anybody here see it yet or know anything about it? No? Okay. Yeah, it's something I really want to see. But what's funny, and I know I've told this story on the show before. So for those people that don't know it, we talk about Manhattan Plaza. Manhattan Plaza is a pair of buildings in Hell's Kitchen at 43rd and 9th Avenue and 10th Avenue. And it is government-subsidized housing for people in the theater industry. When I first moved to New York in 1977, me and my roommate put an application in for it. It hadn't been opened yet. But in the meantime, we found this really terrible apartment on 14th Street and 3rd Avenue. And we didn't know anything. We didn't have the foresight of knowing what was going to happen. So after we had gotten this really god-awful, terrible apartment on 14th Street, we got notice that we had been approved for Manhattan Plaza. And we said, no thanks.
Okay, I want you out of here.
Everybody I know that moved in back there, I've got friends that I knew in the 70s that are still in their same exact apartment.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's an amazing place. And the area at the time, you know, it was called Hell's Kitchen. It was not the best area in the world. It was just west of the Port Authority bus terminal, which was not the best place in the world. But where I did the Broadway show Bowling League in the bowling alley in Port Authority, it was really wonderful. Anyway, we really don't have time to talk about it, so we're not. So go see Hell's Kitchen. It all comes back to me. The other thing that opened was Cabaret with Eddie Redmayne.
I'm familiar with that show.
Well, this is not the
not
Cabaret.
The classic one.
This is called Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club.
Yeah.
And it starts 75 minutes before the show starts. They have transformed the theater Okay, can I remember the theater name?
Studio 54.
No, it's not Studio 54.
Oh, it's the August Wilson.
It's at the August Wilson. Yeah. Thank you. They've turned it into the Kit Kat Club. So you come in an hour and a half before, and you come in through the alley, through the garbage, which is not props, by the way. It's actually the real garbage. And you have three spaces inside where you can enjoy. Anyway, it looks good. It was mixed reviews. There were 15 reviews. Five were positive, four were negative, and six were mixed. I'm not going to go through them, but it just looks really good. Eddie Redmayne, as I said, is playing the MC. Rebecca Frecknell directed it. One of the things they did, and I've had this conversation with folks, how many people here know Cabaret relatively well?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the character of Sally Bowles, a lot of people... I've heard this from people that whenever there's an actor playing Sally Bowles that is a really accomplished singer, they think that that's wrong, that Sally Bowles should not be. And I don't know if I agree with that, but in this version, they sort of played that to the hilt. And the woman playing Sally Bowles in the first song, I think it's Don't Tell Mama, Mine Hair, I don't remember which one it is. The very first song she sings, it's like she's terrible.
Oh.
She's terrible. And it isn't until she sings, let me see if I can get the...
Maybe This Time.
I think it's Maybe This Time, that she starts being a little bit more naturalistic, and it's really good. And Maybe This Time, exactly. They called it riveting. And it turns out she can properly sing, it says. So playing Frau
Schneider
and her male interest, I can't remember his name.
Schultz,
thank you. Is Bebe Neuwirth and Stephen Skyball.
And she's kind of the toast right now.
Yes.
She just got recognized for, was it Our Critics Circle?
I think I kind of shut off all the other awards just because there's so many at this time. The Outer Critics Circle nominations just came out today, I think. Cabaret looks good. I'm not going to go through it because we are so behind time. And we've got three more shows. Patriots opened. And all I'm just going to say is this is about Putin. and his rise to glory. It opened on Monday at the Ethel Barrymore. It's written by Peter Morgan. It got three positive and eight mixed. Putin is played by Will King, and Berezovsky is played by Michael Stolberg. And it's basically after the fall of the Soviet Union. And they were trying to find someone to replace Gorbachev, and and the oligarchs were in charge at this point, and this oligarch chose Putin. Mm. We all know how that's happening. So I'm just going to read one of the things which I thought is something interesting. Jesse Green wrote this. Both lead actors are superb. Where was that thing that I wanted to read? I can't find it, but it basically goes the line of people talking about leading to Donald Trump and how we get to a...
autocracy?
Yeah, I forgot the name. I'm never grow old,
it's
you guys.
A good thing.
All right, anyway.
It's a good thing Jim's here.
Jim is my everything. Then we had... This was kind of a surprise for me. Heart of Rock and Roll, the Huey Lewis musical.
Huh.
Opened as well, and it opened, it opened on the 22nd, that was what, two days ago. At the James Earl Jones, and it is set in 1987, and it was just filled with lots of music by Huey Lewis and the News, he's an interesting person. I actually worked with him back when I was working with corporations, doing what we called business theater. We hired him. Very nice man, and great in front of a corporate audience.
Seems like it.
Yeah. And one of the podcasts I listened to, Broadway Radio, Has been talking about this a lot because Grace Aki, who is one of the co-hosts on that, is very involved in this show and knows a lot of the people. So they've been talking about it a lot. So this is set in 1987. It's written by Jonathan Abrams, based on a story by Tyler Mitchell. And it says, let me see if I can find. So the heart of rock and roll centers on a couple of 20-somethings in the cusp of their future. Bobby, a rock and roller who's traded his guitar for the corporate ladder, and his boss, Cassandra, who always puts family business first. When they both get a second shot at their dreams, it'll take the power of love and a little help from their friends to figure out what they really want. So it's a love story. And it says, so it's evidently pretty heavy, but it says, fortunately, there's enough good-natured goofball humor to keep the Gordon Greenberg's production from sinking into cloying goo.
But largely, it was well-rated by the readers.
Well-rated,
right?
Yeah. So the final paragraph, which of the review says, the heart of rock and roll is not going to be the subject of think pieces and graduate theses, but its easygoing good spirits are bolstered by solid craftsmanship, and it'd be silly to turn up your noses at that. Have a good time, Huey Lewis once sang wisely, quoting Curtis Mayfield, because it's all right. All right, and our last one was, I think it's Mary Jane. Jessica. Mary Jane. Yeah. This one had 8 reviews, all of them positive, and this looks pretty amazing. It is an Amy Herzog play. It is written about a woman and caring for her son, who is, I don't know if they ever said what his thing is, but he had disorders from when he was born. So the first, it's done in 2 sections. They don't have, it's no acts because there's no intermission. But the first one happens in her home and the second happens in the hospital. It's her and then 4 female other actors that play, in the first half they play 4 caretakers. And then in the second half, they play 4 other caretakers in the hospital. And it just sounds really good. It was produced in 2017 at the New York Theater Workshop, and this is a Manhattan Theater Club production. And it stars Rachel McAdams. And she's supposed to be really, really great. And the only other name I knew was Lily Santiago. It looks really, really amazing. The staging, the director is Ann Kaufman. And evidently the costumes are really great. By Brenda Abarandadolo.
Well done. If you say so.
Okay, that was not easy. So evidently Carrie Coons played it off-Broadway, and now Rachel McAdams is doing it, and evidently Rachel McAdams sort of turned the page on it.
Nice.
So we went through all the openings.
Well, let's go.
I have all this other stuff that I wanted to talk about that we're not going to get to. So, you know, we're just going to jump in and very quickly do the local stuff before we go into our next guests. I just want to talk about Teatro Vivo. It's got their Austin Latinx New Play Festival that goes from the 25th to the 27th. More information at teatrovivo.org. And here's the list of things that are playing right now. Big deep breath. Good Thief is at Hyde Park Theater. Year with Frog and Toad at Zach. The Prom is at Zach. Born with Teeth at Austin Playhouse. Above the Fold, Filigree Theater over at something on 5th. Plays through the 28th. Romeo and Juliet out at the Curtain through the 28th. Girl from the North Country we just talked about through the 28th. The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body is still over at the Vortex till May 4th. Every Brilliant Thing, or as I have it, Every Brillion Thing at Austin
That's
Playhouse.
That's a different one.
It is. From the 26th to the 19th. Overheard on a Train, we kept talking about that. It happens through the 25th of May. Tiny Beautiful Things, Deaf Austin Theater is opening up the new theater space on the 10th of May through the 26th. And of course, Ground Floor Theater has Clyde's from May 16th through the 31st.
Exciting.
It is very exciting. And I'm not going to go through Today in Theater History, but I am just going to say in Today in Theater History, It is the anniversary of Funny Girl.
Nice.
The revival. So we're going to listen to a little bit of that. Sadie, Sadie, Married Lady. We'll be right back.
I'm Sadie, Sadie, Married Lady.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Jim. And we are going to introduce our guests and the reason why they came here. These are the folks from Gaslight Baker Theaters, production of A Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. That's a new play that I've never heard of. And we have four of the cast members here. And I'm going to reintroduce, and we'll see what I do with pronunciation. Andrea Littlefield.
That's right.
How are you? You're playing Big Mama.
I'm playing Big Mama.
Then Dawn Wright Calvert.
Yes, hello.
Marguerite.
Maggie the Cat.
And Derek Bazinski, you're playing Brick.
Nailed it, yep.
And then Michael Vibrial.
Eh, close enough, Vibrial.
Vibrial, damn. And I don't know what you're doing.
I'm assistant director.
Assistant director. And we were going to have the director, but he is not coming. So you're the assistant, next best thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Michael, why don't you tell us about Cat on the Hot Tin Roof if people don't know what it is?
Absolutely. So, I bet a lot of people have seen the 50s movie. This is not that. The movie was a sanitized version of what Tennessee Williams actually wrote. He kept rewriting it several different times. Mm-hmm. So what we're putting on is the version from the 70s, which was his third and final rewrite of the play, incorporating a couple of aspects from the previous couple of versions. Now, the thing about that means that it is brutal. It is heavy.
Well, Tennessee Williams, yeah. Heavy.
He pulls no punches whatsoever. It once it gets going, it does not stop. There's a lot there. There's a lot of subtext that got cut out of the movie version that is very much present in the script, and we're leaning into that in our production.
Yep. Well, interestingly, that production starred Elizabeth Ashley, Fred Gwynn, among others, Charles Siebert, and directed by Elia Kazan. I always had trouble pronouncing his name. Fred Gwynn. Herman Munster.
Yes. Apparently, probably Big Daddy.
I would assume so. I wonder if he took his little things out of his neck for that.
Probably not.
So, Andrea, tell us about Big Mama. What's her character? What is
sure.
she?
Sure. You know, it's funny because...
Haha, funny?
No. Well, she is kind of the comic relief. Uh-huh. She has a lot of the really funny lines, and she's used that way, but... For me, as an actress, this is probably the most challenging role I've ever had.
Sure.
She goes from really happy and excited to as bad as it gets. So as an actress, it's really hard to go from here to there all the time, but it's great. And Big Daddy's awesome. He's not here, but he's just wonderful.
And who's playing Big Daddy?
Greg Dew.
Greg Duke?
Duke. D-E-W.
Dew.
And I make him give me a hug when he comes off stage after we've had our little scene.
Sure.
He's delightful.
He is.
Dawn, tell us about Margaret.
Margaret is a very desperate and frustrated woman. And I find her to be very painfully relatable in a lot of ways. I love her. I do. I do. I think a lot of people think that she's... very hard and callous and very manipulative and stuff. But I think that she's really just kind of ready to just take on whatever she needs to in order to get things done.
Sometimes you just got to do what you need to do.
Sometimes you just do what you got to do.
Well, and as we know, Tennessee Williams wrote women's parts expertly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's known for that.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Andrea, nodding. Sorry, nodding yes. does not
I forgot,
work on
nodding
the radio.
Nodding does not work on radio. Oops.
And Derek, tell us about Brick.
Brick is the favorite son, one of two sons, but favorite son of Big Mama and Big Daddy. And this play starts with him and continues with him battling a whole host of. Issues. You know, he opens on a crutch after breaking his ankle and what is revealed as sort of drunken shenanigans. And there's questions of his alcoholism and sexuality throughout the play. And he is probably more of the quiet, person in the show, mm-hmm. but it sort of all revolves around him, and yeah, a lot is revealed and a lot is had to go through with him.
Okay, y'all are prepared to do a little scene for us, are you not?
Yes.
So, Michael, do you want to set it up? Set up the scene for us? Or
hey, what scene are we doing?
Okay. Or somebody else can.
I just got here.
Somebody set it up.
For this scene, this is kind of Maggie's first attempt, I think, at trying to reconcile with Brick a bit and kind of invite him in a bit. So to speak.
Wonderful. Well, since people, longtime listeners of this program know I engineer my own show, so when I have to talk to people, I just do it right on the air. Can y'all just each take an individual microphone
sure.
for this? Mm-hmm. So one, I need one person to walk over to that microphone over there. There you go.
Okay. Oh, give me the tall one.
Well, now you can move it. So we just show how the sausage is made here on stage and on there. Okay, folks, this is Andrea Littlefield, Dawn Wright Calvert, and Derek Bazinski doing a scene from Gaslight Baker Theater's production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
You were a wonderful lover. Such a wonderful person to go to bed with, and I think it's because you were really indifferent to it. Isn't that right? You never had any anxiety about it, did it naturally, easily, slowly, with absolute confidence and perfect calm, more like opening a door for a lady or seating her at a table than giving any expression to any longing for her. Your indifference made you wonderful at lovemaking. Strange, but true. You know, if I thought you would never, never, never make love to me again, I would go downstairs to the kitchen and I would pick out the longest and sharpest knife I could find and stick it straight into my heart. I swear I would. But one thing I don't have is the charm of the defeated. My hat is still in the ring, and I am determined to win. What is the victory of a cat on a hot tin roof? I wish I knew. Just staying on it, I guess. As long as she can. Later tonight, I am going to tell you that I love you, and maybe by that time you'll be drunk enough to believe me. Yes, they are playing croquet, and Big Daddy is dying of cancer. What were you thinking of when I caught you looking at me like that? Were you thinking of Skipper? Oh, excuse me. Forgive me, but laws of silence don't work. No, laws of silence don't work. Laws of silence don't work. When something is festering in your memory or your imagination, laws of silence don't work. It's just like shutting a door and locking it on a house fire in hope of forgetting that the house is burning. But not facing a fire doesn't put it out. Silence about a thing just magnifies it. It grows and it festers in silence, becomes malignant.
Give me my crutch.
Lean on me.
No, just give me my crutch.
Lean on my shoulder.
I don't want to lean on your shoulder. I want my crutch. Are you going to give me my crutch, or do I have to get down on my hands
here,
and knees
here,
on the floor?
Here, take it. Take it.
Thanks.
We mustn't scream at each other. The walls in this house have ears. But that is the first time I've heard you raise your voice in a long time, Brick. A crack in the wall of composure. I think that's a good sign. A sign of nerves in a player on the defensive?
It just hasn't happened yet, Maggie.
What?
The click I get in my head when I've had enough of this stuff to make me peaceful. Will you do me a favor?
Maybe I will. What favor?
Just keep your voice down.
I will do you that favor. I will speak in a whisper, if not shut up completely, if you will do me the favor and make that drink your last one until after the party.
Amazing. Thank y'all so much. Unfortunately, we just have enough time to close up. Tell us when y'all open and close.
We open on a Friday, the 26th, and we close on May 11th. For more information, you can visit our website at www.mygbt.org.
Awesome. Thank y'all so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck with your opening.
No Neck Little Monsters.
That was Andrea Littlefield, Dawn Wright Calvert, and Derek Bazinski, and Michael Vibrial of Gaslight Baker Theater's Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, the 26th of this month through the 11th. And for more information, mygbt.org. And boy, I wanted to play this song, but we don't have time. I couldn't help it. It was from Cats, the movie.
Unrelated to...
McCavity, and it was sung by Taylor Swift. But can't do it. So next week, we are not here. We'll be doing a pre-recorded show all about the new theaters that are going to be opening up here in Austin, Texas. Jim, thank you so much for playing with me.
Thank you so much for having me. How fun is this?
I really, really appreciate you being here. You know what? I changed my mind. We're going to go out with McCavity. Stand by for the Austin Cooperative Hour and Lights, Camera, Austin with Robert Sims coming up. And we're going to play McCavity with Taylor Swift singing. So we will see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. He's broken every human law.